Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. Yes, welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I want to apologize for the somewhat delayed start as we jump here into the new year in 2010. But you must understand that the entire family here, the entire McBurney clan, was stricken by a virus the close of 2009 and the dawn of 2010. In fact, had you come into our offices here, into our studio, some 48 hours ago, why, you would have thought you stumbled on a couple of heroin addicts in day two of withdrawal. It was just awful. An unbelievable virus struck us. I wonder if I can describe the pain that this virus brought. Okay, I think I can explain it to the men in the audience. I'm not sure if the women will understand this, but let me describe what I've been going through for the past 48 hours. Okay, imagine, guys, you're kicked full on in the groin. And I'm not talking about a glancing blow. I'm talking about a steel-toed boot that lifts you off the ground and makes you throw up. Okay? That was how it started. Now imagine that that pain, that throbbing pain, travels throughout your entire body and involves every joint and every bone, every muscle, and every time you move, and hangs on for 2 days. That's what I've been going through. And we looked for a guest host, and we determined that there simply is no one who can fill in. The person does not exist that can fill in here on the Weekly Worldview. And so we've had a bit of a delay, but we are ready to go. We're ready to launch here as we look out into a year that promises to be quite bizarre and interesting. Now, I want to start out talking about the insanity that's going on. The insanity of treating enemy soldiers in this war against America, a war against the West, by Islamofascists, Muslim terrorist extremists. It's their war against us, and we're treating them like criminals. And it's driving me insane. Even in my delirious state of illness, I was wanting to throw things at the television and the radio as I listened to the news over the past 4 or 5 days. Well, ever since the Christmas bombing. And it was a bombing. It was successful. It's just that the plane didn't crash. But the guy did set himself on fire in the plane, and he did break through security. So I would call it a successful terrorist attack. It's just that the outcome wasn't all that the enemy had hoped for. At least not tactically. Strategically and politically, I don't know if they could have hoped for more than what they've gotten, and we'll get into that a little bit later. It's just driving me insane. And then there's the other issue of the rampant vote buying that's going on in this healthcare takeover by the communists and the socialists. Senators and congressmen openly buying each other's votes, openly paying each other off with money they're stealing from you and I, the citizens of the nation. And they're doing it in broad daylight, in public, on television. Or at least they were. Now it's gotten to the point where they figure they better hide this last part. I thought it was interesting to note that C-SPAN had challenged the Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to actually open up the conference of the healthcare communization vote. And I don't know if they're going to do it or not. I don't know if they want. Do they have the nerve to publicly air that much graft and corruption right there in front of God and everyone in the public? Well, I guess we'll find out. I don't see why it would bother them to do that. I mean, the amount of graft and corruption that has been on display over the past 10 weeks is already, it's already just to the point where, well, you'd think someone would stand up and say, maybe the attorneys general who are thinking about taking these people to court will not only find that what they're doing is unconstitutional, but downright criminal. I mean, all right, and we'll get to some of these political issues. I feel like we're in the last days of Rome, and I've probably said this before because I've felt this way for, the better part of 15 years. But with the senators and the congressmen sitting up there, and I can just see them looking out over the walls, thinking, "Oh, those Visigoths, those Vandals, those savages out there, they could never topple Rome." As the city walls rot beneath them because of their own corruption. Anyway, and we'll talk about the Visigoths and the Vandals in the form of the Taliban and the mullahs in Iran and the various terrorists who are at our throats. We'll get into all that, but I want to start first on the... should I start with the terrorists? No, I want to start with this because this is equally as disturbing. I have a Google alert for personhood because I keep track of the personhood movement because, as you know, I'm a big supporter of the personhood of all innocent people and that all innocent people should have the right to life, number one, and other rights that follow after that. All persons should have that. So I'm a big supporter of the movement, and so I have my Google alert, but sometimes it brings me some strange things. This is from a blog, and I'm not going to say the blog because I don't want to give them any press. And I don't really care that much because this is just some random freak who posted. Here's what this freak said. The title of the blog is Gender Other. He, she, it says, "I find it inexplicably appalling that there exists a whole community of non-people, literally, who are denied civil personhood and consequently civil rights, singularly out of legal non-recognition of the third gender. This amounts to a denial of the right to personal autonomy of a transsexual, as I have argued in my previous post." Now, we're not going to get into this person's previous post. "This parochial entrenchment of the binary gendered order bodes awfully for the state and its people." Now, you gotta think this is someone who sounds like they're a sophomore in college and they've just stumbled upon a writing course. And they're trying to impress us with, or he, she, it is trying to impress us with its newfound vocabulary. He, she, it says, "The state cannot possibly be reneging on its promises to a whole section of its people. Add to this, social awareness and efforts toward inclusion is hardly forthcoming and will not be in the absence of laws seeking social change." I have no idea what that sentence means. Come on. This sounds like a product of the modern state education system. But he, she, it in the blog says, "So we find ourselves in this mess, orphaning a section of the Indian people." Oh, it's an Indian. I wonder if it's an American Indian or an Indian Indian. And then this person goes on to discuss the issues of... she's going to talk, he, she, it, I don't know what he, she, it is, but she says she's going to bring out some of the issues associated with this denial of rights to the transsexual, transvestite community, and so on and so forth, and it's just embarrassing. This is the state of civil society today. We have one group of people fighting for the personhood of the smallest, most innocent among us, and another group of people fighting for the personhood of a third gender. The freaks, the deviants, it's us against them, I do suppose. Anyway, let's move on into the news of the day. Well, let's see, speaking of transgendered freaks, let's leave that aside. We'll get to it when we get to it. I want to make a note that in all the Medstream Media's best and worst of 2009 specials, we watched them all, we stayed up till midnight, we tried to... You know, what was the best and the worst and the top and the most provocative and compelling and disgusting stories of 2009? Well, out of all the big stories, I never saw a word about how the global warming hoax was exposed. I mean, you folks remember all those embarrassing emails, right? from East Anglia or Oceania or Eurasia or wherever they were from, that university there in England. You remember all that, right? Well, it didn't make the top stories. I didn't even see it on Fox News, which is allegedly conservative. I didn't see a word about it. Let's see. Dateline Beijing from Reuters. A cigarette triggered an alarm that forced a 2.5-hour stoppage of China's new bullet train. That 2.5-hour stoppage is nearly as long as the train takes to make the 680-mile trip between Guangzhou and Guangdong province over there to the central city of Wuhan, according to Beijing. Managers of the bullet train were unable to catch the smoker, who fled the scene before the alarm sounded. Yeah, that's one fast-moving smoker. I mean, for a smoker, he moves pretty quickly. Authorities tell us that smoking is strictly forbidden on the Wuhan-Guangzhou high-speed train, even in the toilet. They say it could trigger the alarm and even cause equipment failures. So, the Chinese are enforcing the smoking ban there on the bullet train, and as well they should. Why did I want to read that story? I have no idea. Just to try to bring some levity. I think it's funny that you spend $1 billion building a bullet train, and on its maiden day, a smoker throws a monkey wrench into all the works. I just found it amusing. Now, let's get on to the serious business of how to deter terrorists. Because since the Christmas bombing of the Northwestern flight over Detroit, I have been waiting to hear some conservative or even a liberal pontificate the rational means by which we can prevent the next terrorist bombing of an airliner. And I can tell you, it's not going to be full body scans, and it's not going to be profiling, although that's been the conservatives' favorite saw, has been we need to profile. We need to profile Muslims. We need to profile people from Nigeria, from Yemen. And we need full body scans. We need pat downs. We need Jack Napolitano in there herself, frisking people up the thigh and the inner leg. Oh, just imagine that. Anyway, folks, the only solution, in my humble opinion, is how does a good justice system prevent crime? A good justice system prevents crime by striking terror and fear into the hearts of those who would contemplate criminal activity. And I would posit that we, as Americans, our government, our military, our police, our FBI, and our CIA have to strike fear into the hearts of potential terrorists. And not only them, but anyone who would tolerate any one of them to even a minimal degree. You see, the civilian populations of the cities and towns in which Al-Qaeda and Taliban and other terrorists are hiding, you know, like Pakistan, Yemen, Detroit, Buffalo, Gaza. All these communities have to be motivated to turn in anyone suspected of being a Muslim terrorist extremist. And this has to happen, folks. It either has to happen now or after the terrorists have blown a plane out of the sky or nuked Tel Aviv or dirty bombed Atlanta. It has to happen. It's a matter of when. One of these two things will happen in this coming decade. Either the populations of the world will be turned against Muslim terrorists, or a Western city will be destroyed in a nuclear blast. One of those two things will happen in this coming decade. That's one of my predictions for the coming decade. So, folks, our military must be authorized to put a price on every terrorist head. And what is that price, you ask? Well, the price is his village, his friends, his mother, his daughters. Folks, this is war. This is not a criminal investigation. And while this may not be state-sponsored terrorism, clear-cut, it is community-sponsored terrorism. In the information age, it no longer takes a state to start a war. A single person, supported by a small community, utilizing modern technology. I mean, one person can effectively make war on a state or an entire class of people. Our governing officials have to recognize this and craft an effective deterrence strategy. First, States that do sponsor terrorism must be eliminated with extreme prejudice. Iran, Syria, North Korea, all 14 on that new profiling list, all 14 of those. They've got to be targeted with either conventional or nuclear arms or an active intelligence effort to remove their current regimes. That has to happen now. This is war. Second, a policy has to be instituted declaring that any terrorist found to have carried out or attempted to carry out a terrorist act at any level will be subject to a fatal military strike, not only on himself, but upon any identifiable support structure, including the neighborhoods in which he's lived, schools in which he's trained, mosques in which he's worshipped, personal contacts he's had, his family, including wives, girlfriends, children, and extended family. That is the only way we will deter the next terrorist bombing. And with that, we will go right into the war file. We're going to start in North Korea. North Korea, according to the French press agency, last Friday called for an end to hostile relations with the United States. And after a year marked by nuclear missile tests and its rejection of international peace efforts, the call was made in a New Year's joint editorial of several leading North Korean newspapers. The official Korean Central News Agency. And it comes with a U.S. Christian missionary apparently has been detained in the isolated country. Yeah, the detainee is a gentleman named Robert Park, 28-year-old Korean American. He was reported by colleagues to have crossed into North Korea from China on Christmas Day in a one-man protest against repression in the hardline North. That's a pretty gutsy move. Now, how wise is it and how effective? Well, I don't know, but I admire Robert Park's gumption and moxie and all that. I mean, crossing over into North Korea, a one-man Christian protest. I hope he survives, and I hope it does some good. One thing that will save North Korea is Jesus Christ and Christianity. One thing that will save America from North Korea is to evangelize North Korea, and that goes for China as well. So good luck with Mr. Park. Hope the evangelism is going well. Dateline Sana'a, Yemen. Yemeni forces raided an al-Qaeda hideout and set off a gun battle last Wednesday as the government vowed to eliminate the group that claimed it was behind the Christmas Day bombing. The fighting took place in an al-Qaeda stronghold in western Yemen, according to the Associated Press. This Yemeni town is a haven for the group that attacked the U.S. embassy in Yemen in 2008. At least one suspected militant was arrested during the clashes. Arrested? I mean, all right, the Yemeni government is not, I'm sure the Yemeni military and police are not exactly the FBI and the United States Marine Corps. I understand that. But if you're going to have clashes and you end up with one suspected militant arrested, maybe Yemen needs some help, and I think we should be all about either helping the Yemeni government eliminate the terrorists they've been tolerating or eliminating the Yemeni government and installing one that's better to our liking. Defense Department spokesman Brian Whitman, according to the Associated Press, says Yemen received $67 million in training and support under the Pentagon's counterterrorism program last year, second only to Pakistan, who got over $100 million. Not sure how those investments are working out. I'm not sure I support. Well, I'm no expert on counterinsurgency warfare. But as you can tell from the opening of the broadcast, I am an expert on deterring the next terrorist bombing. I just hope that these ideas that I've put forth are instituted before the next bombing instead of after. And I hope that the American people achieve a level of outrage here over the next very short period here that our government is once again treating terrorist soldiers as criminals. I mean, do you remember the outrage after September 11th when we found out about the wall of separation between the FBI and the CIA and intelligence and NSA and the military? Remember how outraged we were that we left ourselves open to the September 11th attacks? Well, all those walls of separation are back up and they're working very well, according, apparently, as we can judge by the success of Mahmoud Abdul Idrul Muttalib, or whoever he was, from Nigeria, via Yemen. Apparently, all of those walls of separation are back up and working well. Thank you very much. Speaking of the insanity of treating soldiers, enemy soldiers, as criminals, Dateline Fort Worth, Texas, from the Associated Press, the Fort Hood mass shooting suspect's attorney, says his client is treated more harshly than other soldiers suspected of crimes. Attorney John Galligan says Major Nidal Hassan has excessive restrictions, including a ban on visitors when his attorneys are in his hospital room. Hassan is at San Antonio Military Hospital, recovering from wounds that left him paralyzed. Well, I don't even know what to say. The fact that he has an attorney. Here's a treasonous soldier who slaughtered dozens of his fellow compatriot soldiers. I mean, that's the definition of treason. That's the definition of a crime, of an act of war, of an act of treason. Did I say crime? See, even I'm getting polluted by this idea. It's not a crime. It's an act of war for which he should have been summarily tried and already executed. But worry not, ladies and gentlemen, Jack Napolitano is on the scene. From the Hill, we have a report. The Department of Homeland Security last Thursday announced it is launching a campaign to strengthen security. They're heightening response. There will be an ongoing review. They're looking at processes. Senior Homeland Security officials will meet. They'll review security procedures, technology. Jack Napolitano will follow up on meetings at a ministerial level, and she'll have discussions. U.S. officials will brief their European counterparts, and they will enact a host of new security rules to spearhead a larger, more unified effort to increase airport security. So that's the war strategy of Jack Napolitano and the people in whose hands rests your security the next time you're on an airport. Yeah. They're going to follow up. They're going to review. They're going to look at processes. There will be ongoing review. They're going to spearhead all of that. Okay. I'm glad I'm not getting on a plane anytime soon. Speaking of the success of our enemy of late, and it does seem disturbing, does it not? It's disturbing to me. It's depressing. From Kabul, a suicide bomber who killed 7 CIA employees at a remote outpost in southeastern Afghanistan had been invited onto the base and was not searched. A former senior intelligence official said the man was being courted as an informant by the CIA. Got on the base and blew up 7 of our CIA agents. I believe this could be the worst casualty count inflicted in CIA history. In any one event. And no matter what anybody tells you, that is a success on the part of our enemy. That is a successful attack. They have been quite successful as of late. In fact, ever since Nidal Hassan went berserk down in Fort Hood and killed his fellow soldiers, ever since then, our enemy has been on their toes. And we seem to be on our heels. From the Times of London, according to Yemen's foreign minister, hundreds of al-Qaeda militants are planning terror attacks from Yemen. Abu Bakr al-Kirbi appealed for more help from the international community to help train and equip counter-terrorist forces. Al-Kirbi said, of course, there are a number of al-Qaeda operatives in Yemen and some of their leaders, and we realize this danger. They may actually plan attacks like those we've just had in Detroit, and there may be hundreds of them. There may be 200 to 300 that the Yemeni foreign minister suspects are in his own country. I mean, that is a success on the part of our enemy. They've trained several hundred enemy soldiers, and they've managed to keep them trained and equipped there in Yemen, and have even began to launch them against us. I mean, somebody's dropping the ball, okay? Let's see, anything else from the foreign minister over there in Yemen? He says, we have to work in a very joint fashion in partnership to combat terrorism. If we do, the problem will be brought under control. Now, here is the... That is the type of thinking that is unsatisfactory in a situation like this. Our goal cannot be to bring terrorism under control. Our goal must be to destroy, defeat, kill all the terrorists, and to strike fear into the hearts of everyone associated with those terrorists unto the third generation, so they'll never even ponder or even think about striking anything in the West ever. They have to be scared. And I don't think that a goal of bringing them under control is quite terrifying enough to win this war against Muslim fundamentalist extremists who want to take over the world with a global caliphate, and they want to kill all the Christians and all the non-Muslims. One more from the war file from the Times of London again. 2 days after police used lethal force to contain a massive nationwide demonstration, Tehran also lashed out against foreign critics. The foreign ministry summoned Simon Gass, the British ambassador, for a dressing down. The move appeared to be a part of an attempt to portray the opposition as a puppet of the Islamic regime's Western enemies. Iranian foreign minister declared that Britain would, quote, receive a punch on the mouth if it did not stop this nonsense, unquote, accusing Britain of supporting those who are protesting against the mad mullahs in Iran. You know, I'm convinced that Iranian citizens, especially people in the echelons of government, civilian echelons of government, are fully aware that the mullahs and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad are on a suicide mission to acquire nuclear weapons and use them, despite the fact that Tehran itself would be nuked and obliterated if and when the attack on Tel Aviv takes place. And I think the Iranian citizens know that they can die today or they can die tomorrow. But it's time to fight this regime. And I hope that I hope that Britain is helping them. I hope that we are. I hope someone is helping these poor people. I mean, they may not be people that I would want to go to lunch with or have tea with, these Iranian citizens. I don't know. But they're certainly not mad, fanatical, suicidal mullahs. And so I'm willing to take a chance with the alternative at this point. All right. Now, let's move on from the war, because that is a depressing batch of news, I must say. Let's move into the, well, reports from Western culture are maybe not as immediately threatening physically, but they're certainly spiritually demoralizing to see what's happening. From ABC News, for example, Amanda Simpson is America's first openly transgendered presidential appointee. Did you get that? We've crossed another Rubicon, ladies and gentlemen. America's not first openly gay, not first openly socialist, not first openly Marxist. We're talking full-on, openly transgendered Amanda Simpson apparently once was a boy. Although that's not 100% clear in this article. Whenever you're writing about transgendered people, it's just never 100% clear. But since its name is Amanda now, and she calls itself openly transgender, we're going to assume that Amanda was a boy. And what I find interesting is ABC says this is the first openly transgendered presidential appointee. So the question of that begs the question, have there been others? Janet Reno comes to mind. Jack Napolitano. I mean, I'm just asking. Anyway, Amanda Simpson, the transgendered freak, says she fears being labeled a token hire. Yeah, she doesn't want to be who was hired because of her sexual identity rather than her merits. She says, I've broken barriers at lots of other places, and I always win people over with who I am and what I can do. Folks, Simpson has been named Senior Technical Advisor in the Commerce Department's Bureau of Industry and Security. He, she, it will monitor the exports of U.S. weapons technology. Yeah. Okay. So the first openly transgendered appointee has a direct bearing in the war against Muslim fundamentalists, and she says, I've broken barriers at lots of other places. Yeah. Yeah, she's broken lots of barriers at lots of other places. It's just disturbing. Okay, here's a shocker. A shocker, ladies and gentlemen. Johnson & Johnson heiress Carrie Johnson, the daughter of Jets owner Woody Johnson and great-granddaughter of the founder of Johnson & Johnson, was found dead of an apparent drug overdose at her Los Angeles home yesterday. Her recent antics included an engagement to lesbian and B-list reality star Tila Tequila. Casey Johnson was just 30 years old. And as far as we know, unfortunately, Tila Tequila remains alive, at least for the moment. All right, and we'll move right on through the disturbing culture file. In New Hampshire, over in Concord, New Hampshire, from the Associated Press, jubilant couples have rung in the new year in New Hampshire with wedding vows to celebrate the state's new law legalizing deviant, perverted homosexual marriage. Yeah, at midnight there on New Year's Eve, New Hampshire joined Massachusetts, Vermont, Connecticut and Iowa on their way to hell in a handbasket, allowing homosexuals to act like they're married and even to legally be married in the eyes of a twisted and perverted, corrupt, rotten, and deteriorating state. Yes, that's what happened on New Year's Eve in New Hampshire. Now, listen to this, folks. Couples already in civil unions have three options to convert their statuses to marriages. They can have marriage ceremonies, file marriage paperwork in their town clerk's office to convert their statuses during 2010, or wait until the unions are automatically converted in 2011. Of course, there are certain stipulations. If one homosexual dies of AIDS or is beaten to death by the other in a drunken rage, their status will be adjusted on a case-by-case basis. So it goes back to my question. Does anybody remember Rome? I mean, it was fairly obvious to most people 30 years ago. I mean, when I was first becoming politically aware, one of the things I learned about was that Rome was a great society that fell victim to moral decay, primarily homosexuality, heterosexual deviancy as well, all sorts of sexual immorality that caused the Roman Empire to be vulnerable to even the crudest of attacks. And in fact, it was the crudest of attackers that eventually fell the Roman Empire. But nobody seems to remember that anymore. And you know, this, I'm convinced this is why the Holocaust will happen again. It will happen again because people seem to have a very short memory, even for facts that should be seared into the collective memory of all humankind. That's why this is an example. People forgetting things this basic and this widely known. People forgetting this is why the Holocaust will happen again. We have to be vigilant. All right. What do we have? Oh, boy. I tell you, the deviants are pouring out of the closet here to launch 2010. It's just sad. Vermont Family Court judge, according to the Associated Press, ordered Lisa Miller of Winchester, Virginia, to turn over her daughter Isabella to Janet Jenkins of Fairhaven what happened here, Miller and Jenkins, two women, were joined in a Vermont civil union back in 2000. Isabella was born through artificial insemination in 2002. The couple broke up in 2003. Then Miller moved to Virginia, renounced homosexuality, and became an evangelical Christian. So the judge naturally wants to take the child away from the Christian woman who bore the child and give it to the freak psycho lesbian. The judge, Family Court Judge William Cohen, awarded custody of the girl to the dyke back in November after finding Miller in contempt of a court for denying the dyke access to the child. The judge said the benefits of the child having access to both parents would be worth the difficulties of the change. And that's the status of judges in our fair land. They're in New England. Jenkins' attorney, now which one is Jenkins? I get confused here now. Let's see. Miller became an evangelical. Okay, so the Dyke's attorney, Sarah Starr, says it's Ms. Jenkins. It is Ms. Jenkins' intent when she has custody of Isabella to allow liberal contacts with the other mother. Oh, my goodness. It hurts to even say that. You know who's the victim here, besides all of us having to read about this, is the young daughter, Isabella. Yeah. Just sad. The Supreme Courts, according to the Associated Press, the Supreme Courts of Virginia and Vermont ruled in favor of the dyke, saying the case was the same as a custody dispute between a dysfunctional heterosexual couple. The case was appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, which declined to hear the arguments on it because they thought it might make them throw up. Okay, I made up that last part. I'm not sure why the U.S. Supreme Court decided not to hear the case, but believe me, they're better off having not heard it. Having just read it myself, it's quite disturbing. All right, now speaking of dysfunctional heterosexual couples. A couple in Georgia, according to the Weekly World News, a highly credible news source, a couple in Georgia have been arrested for tattooing their six children. Yeah. Oh, six of their seven children. They tattooed six of their seven children in their own home. After receiving a tattoo machine from a friend. Now that's where you need the word alleged. If somebody loans you a tattoo machine, are they really your friend? Anyway, after receiving a tattoo machine from an alleged friend, they fixed it up and used guitar strings as a needle. And after Thanksgiving dinner, they tattooed small crosses on all but the youngest of their children. Patty Joe Marsh and Jacob Bartles are the dysfunctionals in question here. They were arrested after two of the children went to visit their biological mother for Christmas, and she discovered they'd been tattooed. And she freaked out. So there's at least one normal person in this story. The couple were charged with cruelty to children, reckless conduct, and tattooing. Without a license, apparently. Anyway, that's just sick. Just disgusting. I mean, I've never been a big fan of tattoos, but if a grown adult wants to get a tattoo, I suppose I don't begrudge them that. But to tattoo an innocent child, and then to tattoo a cross on an innocent child, anything. I mean, it's just, I tell you, the state of parenting, I shouldn't say parenting, I hate that word. It's not really a word. That's a word made up by hippies, parenting. Child rearing. The state of child rearing is, well, it's in a sad decline, for crying out loud. Even amongst the heterosexuals. All right. From Albany, New York, from the CBS News, a Montgomery County, New York couple has been arrested on child endangerment charges for failing to register their children with the school district as they were homeschooled. Yes, Richard and Margie Cressy of Glen, New York, never registered their four children or their homeschooling curriculum with the local school district. And so the stormtroopers came and arrested them. Let's see, the superintendent of the school district confirmed that the four children ranging in age from 8 to 14 had not been registered with the school district for at least 7 years. My goodness, I'm wondering, how did the children survive? It's a wonder they're still alive. They weren't registered. Since when did we have to start registering children? I mean, I'm against registering guns. I'm not a big fan of registering my car, mostly just because of the standing in line. But when did we have to start registering children, for crying out loud? Let's see, the Cressys, they have to appear in court in the town of Glenn here in the not-too-distant future. And this is a case I'm sure we'll follow up on. Certainly a bizarre state of affairs, wouldn't you agree? Registering children. What is this, the Third Reich? All right, let's move on. Through the culture file, let's see if I can do something to lift our spirits just a little bit. My goodness. Let's see, from ESPN. ESPN and Discovery Communications announced plans last Tuesday to launch the industry's first 3D television network. Yeah, the new channel is going to be called ESPN 3D, and it will feature sporting events beginning in June with the first 2010 FIFA World Cup soccer match down there in South Africa. So that's just what we need, 3D soccer. That'll save the world. So it's going to be 3D, but it's still predicted to be extremely boring, but in three dimensions. 3D soccer. So perhaps all is not lost. We'll have 3D sports. Because, you know, Americans, they can't get enough sports. And neither can the Europeans, or the South Americans, or the Asians. Just can't get enough sports. And if you can, if the culture collectively can stay distracted enough by sports, perhaps you won't be so offended by the fact that you have to register your children. All right. Now, speaking of sports, here we go now. This is from SportsIllustrated.com. Two Washington Wizards teammates, three-time NBA All-Star Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenden, drew guns on each other in the locker room after practice on Christmas Eve when they had an argument over a gambling debt. Now, I seem to remember, and it probably wasn't more than 10 years ago, that there was a great outcry from sports aficionados across the fruited plain regarding the name of the Washington Bullets. You remember, the Washington Wizards basketball team was once called the Washington Bullets, but they changed the name because they wanted to give the Washington Bullets a cleaner image. And so now, instead of being called the Washington Bullets, their teammates are threatening to exchange real bullets in the locker room despite the name change. Now they're the Wizards. But, the Wizard announced that Arenas had admitted to bringing guns to the locker room. He told the officials that he stored the unloaded firearms in his locker so they wouldn't be so close to his kids at their home. Okay. He told the Washington Times that he moved the weapons from his home to a lockbox after his daughter was born. And Mr. Arenas, unless you're a criminal or a crack dealer, the time when you should feel like you need a weapon is when you have small children at home, because you don't want anyone to break into your home and hurt your small children. So you should responsibly be able to have a weapon in your home. But you're obviously some kind of borderline crackhead, drug dealer, whack job, gangsta thug is what you really are. And if you weren't playing basketball, you would be in prison, in my humble opinion. And so he feels uncomfortable with a gun around his children because he knows he's a moron. And he doesn't know how to handle a gun properly. And the gun's not really there for defending his family. It's there to make him feel like a big shot. Right? Let's see. He says, I decided I didn't want the guns in my house around the kids anymore. So I took them to my lockbox at the Verizon Center. Then, like a week later, I turned them over to the security guard and told them to hand them over to the police because I don't want them anymore. I wouldn't have brought them to D.C. had I known the rules. After my daughter was born, I was just like, I don't need these guns anymore, said Arenas. Obviously, a complete idiot. And it's better. I suppose we could all feel better that he doesn't possess any guns at the moment because he's obviously a danger to himself. Anyway, Washington Bullet stars draw guns on one another. All right. Now let's move on. Oh, this is outrageous. Listen to this. From the Associated Press in Detroit, Michigan, a fire swept through a two-story home early Tuesday, killing three people who had been illegally accessing electricity. Now, those living at the home, by the way, the victims were a 62-year-old fella, a 61-year-old fella, and a 58-year-old fella. Now, the sad thing is, if you've got three gentlemen who have reached their late 50s to early 60s and still cannot afford to pay their electric bill, you know that they have made some poor choices in their life. Now, they couldn't afford to pay their electric bill, so let's see here. The Associated Press tells us those living in the family home had been without power for a long time because of unpaid bills and had been using electric space heaters for warmth, illegally tapping electricity to make up for the fact that brutal, uncaring capitalists had demanded that they pay for their electricity. And when they didn't pay for their electricity, they shut their electricity off. So here it is, folks, another death that can be directly attributed to capitalism. I am your host, Doug McBurney. We are rounding third and headed for home in the new year, the dawn of 2010. And we're gonna go to Helena, Montana. Helena, Montana, from the Associated Press. The Montana Supreme Court said last Thursday that nothing in state law prevents patients from seeking physician-assisted suicide, making Montana the third state that will allow the procedure. That is, they will allow doctors to kill their patients. A lower court decided a year ago that constitutional rights to privacy and dignity protect the right to die. Now, this is just bizarre because I'm involved with a movement, the personhood movement, that is advocating the right to live. Meanwhile, there are other people, probably more highly educated than myself and most of the people associated with my movement, who are fighting to protect the right to die. So who do you think ends up winning in the long term? That's right, I think it will be us. Possibly because we'll be the only ones who don't kill ourselves. Now, back to Helena. Back to Helena Handbasket. Back to Helena Handbasket, Montana. Steve Johnson, a 72-year-old Helena Handbasket cancer patient, welcomed the decision, saying he has talked with his doctor about ending his life. Okay, Steve, so long. Good riddance. He says, I'm very concerned about the intense pain and loss of dignity. Now, he's a lifelong rancher and a veterinarian. He says, I've accepted my death. I approach the end of my life with a clear mind. Okay, good, Steve. Go to hell. The Montana Supreme Court, according to the Associated Press, I'm sorry, Alexis, I didn't mean to be so mean to him. You think maybe Steve's an okay guy? Maybe? No? Okay. I think she agrees with me. She was just a bit offended by my harsh manner. Yeah, okay. Now, according to the Associated Press, the Montana Supreme Court has determined that this is a choice that state law entrusts to Montana patients, not to the government, said a spokesman for Compassion and Choices. Compassion and Choices. I tell you what, if we're not living in 1984... I mean, it's just bizarre where your group is called Compassion and Choices, and it's about helping doctors kill their patients so that the kids can just move in on the inheritance. Oh, no, that would never happen, right? No, come on. Let's see, that their legal director, Catherine Tucker, she's a lawyer on the case. She says, Montanans trapped in an unbearable dying process deserve and will now have this end-of-life choice. Unbelievable. So I guess those with no faith and who have no hope for the afterlife, you know, we as Christians believe that our bodies will be redeemed and will be resurrected, and that there will be no more sickness and no more pain. So even going through a horrible, painful death, I mean, one woman at our church here over the past several months, she recently died of just a horrible cancer that was, I'm sure, unbearable. But she had faith that pain would be replaced by joy, and there would be no more pain, that she would be resurrected, and that she would be given a body that would never be sick again. But I guess if you have no faith, I mean, just imagine what it must be like facing a horrible, tortured, painful death with no faith that there will be any relief. I actually feel sorry for this idiot, Steve Johnson, now. I've talked myself into feeling sorry for him. I think you were right, Lexus. All right. The Montana ruling came in the case Compassion and Choice. Compassion and Choice is filed on behalf of Robert Baxter of Billings and four physicians. Baxter, who was diagnosed with leukemia 12 years ago, died of lymphoma on December 5th. Huh. So he seems to have made it through the dying process without the help of Compassion and Choices or a physician. So apparently the dying process, you can make it through the dying process without these people's help. Anyway, I don't want to deny anyone their dignity or their right to choose for themselves. But keep in mind that dying, facing a horrible death, it's as much about being brave and being an example to those around you as it is about your own selfish little self. And I guess that doesn't matter anymore to people. They don't care what their children think, what their families think. You know, that you're a weak wimp who wimps out at the end. I guess it doesn't matter anymore. Anyway, on into the culture file from Newsweek. Newsweek article describes extensive cross-ethnic and international research on spanking by doctors Jennifer Langsford and Ken Dodge, whoever these people are. I'm sure they're fine people. Their data suggested that if a culture views spanking as the normal consequence for bad behavior, kids aren't damaged by its occasional use. Whoa. To explain this shocker, that's how Newsweek puts it. To explain this shocker, that's a shock to Newsweek, the scholars suggested that in cultures or communities where spanking is common, parents are less agitated when administering spankings. Spanking almost never, when combined with losing your temper, can be worse than spanking frequently. So spanking once in a while when you're really upset is bad. But an occasional spanking in a well-controlled discipline situation, Newsweek is shocked to find it doesn't damage kids. Yeah. Let's see. There's a new population study underway. Involves interviews of 2,600 people and their adolescent children every 3 years for the next 20 years. It turns out that almost a quarter of the teens reported they were never spanked. So this is a perfect opportunity, according to researchers, to answer a very simple question. Are kids who've never been spanked any better off long term? Well, the researcher's summary is blunt. She says, I didn't find that in my data. Those who'd been spanked just when they were young, ages 2 to 6, were doing a little better as teenagers than those who'd never been spanked on almost every measure. Only the teenagers who were still being spanked clearly showed problems. And that's a problem with the parents. If you're still spanking your kid in their teenage years, you have blown it. You have not done it correctly. You need some classes. And we'll leave that aside. You can go to Newsweek magazine and look under why spanking might be worse for kids. Anyway, I'll put a link on the blog so that you can go to and read that entire article. Let's see. I don't want to do that story. There's been no rise of atmospheric carbon dioxide in the past 160 years, according to new research. Most of the carbon dioxide emitted by human activity does not remain in the atmosphere, but is in fact absorbed by the oceans and terrestrial ecosystems. Yeah. Some studies have suggested that the ability of oceans and plants to absorb carbon dioxide may have begun to decline, but this new study says no. No, the oceans and the terrestrial ecosystems are doing fine at absorbing CO2, so quit freaking out and quit trying to tax us all to death so that you can fund your CO2 fantasy land, Al Gore. In the domestic tranquility file, and we're coming up to the end here. A gunman opened fire inside a busy shopping center in Helsinki last Thursday, leaving four people dead. This is according to CNN. A gunman opened fire, leaving four people dead. Now, that just bothers me, the way they use the language. The gunman shot four people to death, CNN. He didn't open fire, leaving four people dead. It's as if the gunfire erupted into the ceiling and four people just died of natural causes on the side. It's just unbelievable. Police told a news conference hours after the shooting that they found a sixth victim who turned out to be the shooter. Dear CNN, the shooter is not a victim. All right. Let's see. Dateline Kabul. No. Coast Province. No, wait a minute. Baghdad. No, no. Las Vegas. 66-year-old Johnny Lee Wicks opened fire with a shotgun in a Las Vegas federal building, killing one security guard and wounding a U.S. Marshal before being shot to death. Preliminary evidence points to Johnny Lee Wicks' anger over his Social Security benefits case as the motive. So they denied him Social Security benefits, so he goes on a shooting rampage at the courthouse. Boy, people get mad when you deny them their welfare check. And these days, they have a tendency to try to kill everyone around them. Dateline Detroit from the Associated Press. Detroit police say two gunmen opened fire at a house on the city's east side, killing three people and critically wounding a fourth. Police spokesman said that no one was in custody. A 33-year-old man, a 35-year-old woman, and another man were found dead Monday night, each one of them shot in the head. So Detroit dodged a terrorist massacre from the sky, but the day-to-day slaughter on the ground continues unabated. Right there. In beautiful Detroit, Michigan. Dateline Lakeside, California. Donnell Roberts drove his red pickup truck to a Southern California casino, walked inside a building with a shotgun, and headed for his former manager's office. Authorities say the former investigator for the Indian Tribal Casino Gaming Commission shot and killed a man in the office before fatally turning the gun on himself. With his last appeal denied, this is from the Los Angeles Times. With his last appeal denied, Kevin Cooper faces execution in the 1983 slaying of a Chino Hills family in California. 1983. After 26 years, the legal hurdles to Cooper's execution have been surmounted. With the Supreme Court's decision last month not to review his claim of innocence, the 52-year-old becomes only the sixth of California's 697 death row prisoners cleared for lethal injection once a federal judge in California figures out a revised lethal injection procedure. In California, they know how to sentence them to death, they know how to schedule them and prepare them, but they cannot figure out how exactly to put convicted murderers to death. And that's just another reason why California is circling the drain. Dateline Hollywood, California. Rap superstar Eminem has been receiving guidance in his sobriety battle from Sir Elton John. Yes, Eminem declares he has now been sober for more than 18 months. Elton has been using his own experiences to advise. Elton John's been helping Eminem. And this Contact Music News article points out that Elton's been using his own experiences to advise other celebrities, including singer George Michael and the late Michael Jackson. Okay, so things have worked out pretty well for them, right? No, Eminem is, well, we don't know that he's a homosexual. Everyone else in the story is homosexual. Now, Elton John battled drugs and alcohol addictions early on in his career, but he's been sober since the 1980s. But he can't seem to get over the whole sodomy thing. He's got a problem with that. I mean, yeah, he's off the booze, he's off the pills. But anyway, if Eminem needs advice on what not to put in his mouth, I just don't see how going to Elton John makes any sense at all. All right, that's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank KGov, KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, TheologyOnline.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.